Joining me now, as always on Thursdays, is Barry Shuck of Dogs by Nature. Barry, how are we doing today?
I think all of those people that complained about the heat last week, God has heard their message and has given us 10 days straight of rain.
Yes, they have. Yes. And yes, if you were to look at your phone right now, you see nothing but rain. I would say it's needed. I think it's nice, to be honest with you. I think it was getting really, really hot, and it's nice to be able to have some cooler temperatures. It is a little bit muggy, but having, you know, 80 degrees instead of 100 is always nice, Barry.
As long as it's gone before the first pitch of the Wahoos games, hey, I'm game on for that.
Right, and yeah, first pitch scheduled for 6:35. Hopefully things will be will go on as scheduled. But there's so many things to get into, Barry, with the NFL. I'll ask you about Baker Mayfield and his comments in a minute. But Miles Sanders of the Eagles came out and said, I need the ball more. I need more opportunities. And not necessarily with Miles Sanders' situation individually, but what is the thought that you think goes through the Eagles or any of these teams when a player publicly says, I need the ball more, I need more opportunities?
Well, I think somebody like Miles Sanders, they think that they got an all-star team already. They're in a horrible division, so it's possible that the Eagles could ascend in that division. Of course, the Cowboys are going to have a lot to say about it. But, every year the Cowboys are predicted to go to the Super Bowl and they end up 8-8.
That's true.
But the Eagles will have a good season. But there's high expectations with the Eagles, large part to last season showing in the addition of wide receiver A.J. Brown. It's a rebuilding campaign. But they feel that they can be in the playoffs this year. And Miles Sanders came out and thinks they've got the markings of something special with the talent that they have on offense. And, of course, that includes former Alabama quarterback Jalen Hurts. But you got Devontae Smith, and you've got Sanders at quarterback, and then, of course, Dallas Goedert at tight end. So, you know, you've got the Alabama connection there with Smith and Hurts, and who knows, the Eagles could be one of those dark horse teams this year.
How important of a year? I mean, you know, it's ironic that both Jalen Hurts and Tua are under some sort of pressure, but and they both went to Alabama as well. But how much pressure do you think, you know, Jalen Hurts and Tua are under this year to have a good season and put on a good performance for not just, you know, the fans and everything like that, but the team and show them that they are capable of being a franchise kind of quarterback?
Well, I think this is Tua's year to get the either get it on or get out. I don't think that they're going to be patient after this year. Last year before the trade deadline, during the season, the Miami Dolphins had a trade already worked out with the Houston Texans for Deshaun Watson. Everything was worked out except for the owner of the Dolphins, Stephen Ross, required that Deshaun settle all 22, at the time it was 22, all 22 civil suits about those massage therapists, and he wanted all of them settled, and 18 out of the 22 agreed to a settlement offer, 4 did not, and the 4 that did not is the reason why Deshaun Watson is not in teal and orange right now. If those women had agreed, then Deshaun Watson would have been traded. So what does that tell you? That tells you that the Dolphins hierarchy is not pleased with Tua. He's constantly hurt, but that was the story at Alabama. Great quarterback, constantly hurt. You can't get over and you can't help but get hurt. And some players are more injury prone than others, and they continue to be. Now, Jalen Hurts, he's got the opportunity to ascend the Eagles into a playoff team and contend for the NFC. They call it the NFC East. I call them the NFC Least division.
Right.
And make that Eagles team prominent again. And they feel like they've got an all-star team, that they're going to be great this year. They feel that they're unstoppable. And then the vibes are great with the Eagles.
So you brought up Deshaun Watson, of course, and which is he's been in the news for every sort of reason, it seems like, over the last 12 months. But today it was announced that his hearing has concluded and there's no timetable for a decision. I think I saw that there was a report that it could be a week or two before there's any sort of a decision made, because the judge is going to take her time and really hear things out. But for those of us who may not necessarily understand the full capacity of the situation, what exactly is this hearing been about, and is this going to determine anything as to how his suspension is going to go? Is the NFL basing everything they're doing off of this, or is the judge the one who's making the decision, and then therefore afterwards there could be an appeal? You know, there's so many different things that go into this, Barry.
Yeah, the judge is Sue Robinson. She's the arbitrary officer in this. She's a former judge. She retired in 2017. She's in private practice right now. But she has been presented by both sides of the information on Deshaun Watson. Now, what's at stake here is nothing criminal, nothing civil. That has to do with other situations and other entities. That what is at stake here is the NFL's personal conduct policy. That is a policy that the NFL has instituted on its own about their players, because the league itself is front and center. It's an entertainment business. And the last thing that the NFL wants is they don't want to alienate people of all races and creeds, and especially women. Women are, there was an estimate that they make up almost 40% of fans now.
Wow.
And to an extent, if your woman, your wife, your girlfriend is unhappy with the situation, it's possible that you as a man could feel obligated not to attend games, not to watch games, because you can't choose the NFL over your wife and over your woman.
Right.
So it's important for the NFL to be front and center and say, okay, we're going to take care of this. And if there is a player that is acting against what we believe in, and that's the safety of women, and that's the protection of women, and the integrity of women, then we're going to do something about it. Now, the personal conduct policy has nothing to do with being criminally charged. Deshaun Watson has been cleared 100% of any criminal charges and will never be charged criminally on these 24 suits that are in front of him. The conduct policy with the NFL, it has nothing to do with whether you're charged or not charged. They have their policy, and it states it on its own. Now, if he was criminally charged, it would be pretty much a drop kick on what to do here. But both sides have presented their case to this Judge Robinson, and she alone is going to just take the information and come to a conclusive decision. Now, one of those decisions may be no suspension at all. Other things that could be in her wheelhouse is to suggest a suspension, suggest fines, or both, and how long or how much of each that she will represent. Now, if she comes up with no suspension, then the deal is over with. It's concluded. There's nothing anybody can do. There's no appeal process. But if she suggests suspension or fine or both, then the NFL and the NFLPA have the opportunity to appeal.
Yeah, again, there's so much that goes into this, and it seems as if it's not anywhere really near done, especially if there's something that, you know, is ruled and the players union is like, we're going to appeal this, and it's going to go on and on and on. On the flip side, Baker Mayfield saying that he thinks that his time indeed with Cleveland is done, and there's a mutual interest, I guess, to go their separate ways. Do you get the feeling there actually is a mutual interest, Barry? And it seems like, I know that he's going to get paid if he stays there, but it really seems like Baker is intent on not playing for the Cleveland Browns at all.
Yeah, well, he will get paid, and he will get paid by somebody. The Browns will not outright cut him because he is owed that money, and there's no reason to cut him if they have to pay him anyway. But of course he's ready to move on. He knows that the writing's on the wall. He knows that he's not going to be the starting quarterback. But if you notice, the Browns have not moved him. he's still a member of the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
He's still a roster member. Now, he's not practicing, and he's not showing up to the Berea practice facility. He's not involved in the team at all. However, it's my opinion that the Browns are keeping him for one reason, and that is to see what happens to Deshaun Watson. If Deshaun Watson is suspended, let's say indefinitely, or let's say for 2 years, or let's say for 1 year, and the NFLPA appeals that, and it comes out that that's what's going to happen. Let's say he's indefinitely, and they bring that down to a solid year. Well, now what did the Browns do? They have Jacoby Brissett, who's a journeyman, who's been on four different teams, who's almost 29 years old, been in the league for a while. He was hired as the backup. Do you want him running your team? Baker Mayfield is an NFL starting caliber quarterback. Do you want him running the team? I think it's going to come down, if Deshaun Watson is suspended for a full year, it's going to come down to the team coming to Baker and saying, look, if you want to get paid, we need you to play. We're not going to cut you. We're not going to trade you.
Yeah.
You're going to be on our roster. You can be inactive every week. But if you're inactive every week and you don't show up, we can fine you. And
right.
The fines can equal what his game checks are. So it behooves you to play instead. Now, does he want to do that? No. Do the fans want to see him under duress like that? I don't know. There's still a lot of Baker fans. But what would be an amazing thing is if Deshaun was suspended for a year, Baker comes and plays. He has a great season. He knocks your Cincinnati Bengals off their perch and gets in the playoffs and takes them deep in the playoffs, and he makes the Pro Bowl. And there's a movie right there.
Yeah, there is. There really is. So I don't know if you saw this, Barry, but Keyshawn Johnson the other day on ESPN Radio announced, I guess, who his five scariest quarterbacks to face this year would be. Drawn a lot of criticism for it. I'll give you the order right now and let you say what you will about it. So number one he's got is Lamar Jackson. Number two, Patrick Mahomes. Number three, Josh Allen. Number four, Aaron Rodgers. Number five, Kyler Murray.
Wow. That's a strange list, if you ask me.
Yeah.
That's a very strange list.
Now,
yeah. Now, Kyler Murray, I have never been impressed with him. He, of course, he got a huge contract, drafted number one overall. Now he wants out. I just don't understand the guy like that. But Lamar Jackson, that's a scary dude. He could play a lot of positions on the field, and the fact that he is a running quarterback, and of course, you play twice against him, my team plays twice against him. It's how do you defend that? You got to have a spy on him at all time, and you basically playing 10 on 11 because all the spy does is stay on a parallel string to Lamar. But of course, Aaron Johnson, of course, those are great names off of that. Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes. Of course, I would put Patrick Mahomes number one on that list.
Okay.
I'd probably put Aaron Rodgers number two. It's odd that Tom Brady is not on that list.
Yeah.
Even into his 40s, he's still a dangerous quarterback. And I just think that Josh Allen's got a ways to go, and Kyler Murray's got a ways to go. But not having Tom Brady on that list is just kind of a very odd situation, a very odd list to me. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, so I talked about it a little bit yesterday, and he explained his list a little bit, why Tom wasn't in there, and that was because you can contain him in the pocket. And to that I said, well, it's hard to contain Lamar and Kyler Murray in the pocket, yes, but Kyler Murray was awful in that playoff game. And Lamar Jackson has won only one playoff game in his career. And out of all these players combined, Barry, there are two Super Bowl championships. That is one with Patrick Mahomes and one with Aaron Rodgers. Tom Brady, if I remember correctly, has seven, and he's been to five times the amount that have been won by any of these five quarterbacks. And also, you know, Tom Brady's that guy, Barry. I'm sure that you're under the same impersonation. I would assume that. When there's 2 minutes on the clock, I think there's only one quarterback that many people would take, and that would be Tom Brady, because regardless of the amount of production he gives you throughout the year, if there's one drive that you need, Tom Brady can get it done, and Tom Brady will, in all likelihood, be able to get it done.
Yeah. Well, look at the stats from last year. And you know, when you grade a quarterback, you have to go by stats. Stats and maybe championships, and I disagree with championships, because a lot of people think that championships is the barometer of what makes a quarterback great. But Dan Marino had zero championships. Fran Tarkenton had zero championships, and they were both great quarterbacks. But Tom Brady led the league in passing last year.
Yeah.
He was over 300 yards, and number two was Justin Herbert. I would definitely have put Tom Brady and Justin Herbert on Deshaun Johnson's list there. And then number three is Matthew Stafford. Number five is Derek Carr. So out of the leading passers last year, only one is on Keyshawn's list. And following that is Joe Burrow and Prescott. And then you get Josh Allen. So I don't know what he's going by. I don't know if it's the ability to run.
I think that was part of it. Yeah.
Yeah, apparently so. Because all these are running quarterbacks, or all of them have the ability to run, even Aaron Rodgers. But other than that, statistically-wise, that list shows absolutely nothing to me.
Yeah, so my list would have been, I said Josh Allen was one, I think, because he brings both, you know, the mobile side and the throwing side. I think he's one of the most dangerous. And again, I could flip-flop any of these five, really, but I put Josh Allen at one, Patrick Mahomes at two, Tom Brady at three, Joe Burrow at four, and Aaron Rodgers at five. Of course, I got a little biased with Joe Burrow, but at the same time, last year, every single time there was a big game, Joe Burrow would give you something to go off of, and he would give you a big game. I mean, he was ridiculously good down the stretch of last season. In the playoffs, he didn't have, I guess, any trademark games of being absolutely spectacular, maybe besides that Chiefs game, but for the most part, he's a lot like Tom Brady, where if you needed something, Joe Burrow was going to give it to you. And if Quentin Spain had blocked for one extra second, Joe Burrow was throwing a bomb to Ja'Marr Chase, who would have been open because he did a double move on Jalen Ramsey, and the Bengals might have won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you have to look at this statistic also. Last year, Tom Brady was sacked 22 times. He has a phenomenal offensive line. The Browns have a good offensive line, Indianapolis has a good offensive line, and the Rams have a good offensive line. Tom Brady was sacked 22 times. Joe Burrow, number six in passing yards last year, was sacked 51 times.
Oh, my gosh.
51.
Yeah.
Now, think about it. If he had had time to throw instead of time to not look for somebody open downfield have to scramble and have to run, what would that offense have been? And that offense went all the way to the Super Bowl. So when they needed to fix the line, hopefully they did this offseason. I think they are still the standard in the AFC North Division, even though Baltimore is going to be contend. It's going to be Cincinnati and Baltimore all the way to the last game of the season. Both those games, home and away, are going to be epic. I think the winner of those two games is who's going to win that division this year. But if Joe Burrow, and they can fix that offensive line, which they did a lot this year, then who knows? He could be number three on this list.
I think that's a good argument, is that, you know, imagine Joe Burrow with a good offensive line. That's scary, you know, given how poor they were. I want to jump to the USL to the USFL real quick, and then we'll if you have time for an ADM, right, Barry, then that would be great. But so the USFL championship, not the favored teams. If I remember correctly, the Philadelphia Stars getting to the championship over the Generals, where that was not expected. The Birmingham Stallions, of course, and Philadelphia Stars in the championship for this year's USFL. There were good thoughts for them planning on next year as well, Barry. What are your thoughts on that, and also who do you think is going to win this championship coming up on July 3rd?
Well, the Stars were 6-4 during this regular season, and the Stallions were 9-1. During the regular season, they did meet in Week 5, and Birmingham just completely annihilated them. Even though the score was 30-17, it just wasn't even close. Birmingham has an exceptional defense. They are the leader in most categories except for interceptions. But as far as yards gained and total yards gained and sacks, they are just dominating. I don't think this game's going to be close. I think 30-17 could be another good score. But it's going to be interesting to watch. It's going to be 7:30 our time on Sunday on Fox. Of course, Fox is owns 20% of the league. And I think it'll be a good game. And, you know, if you've got nothing to do on Sunday, then it'd be something. You know, some people say it's historic. I don't think it's historic. It's just another league with another championship game.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree with you there. I don't know if I'd go as far as to say that it's historic. But I will say this. I do think it is a big deal that the league survived the entire season planned, and they're looking ahead and they're looking forward to having another season next year. That is beyond anything that we have seen recently in regards to a spring league getting through the full season and then planning on another one afterwards. I think that was pretty impressive that the USFL was able to have as much success, at least it seems like they were able to.
Yeah. The only thing I could think of that is a negative on that is the entire season was played in the city of Birmingham and all games were played until the playoffs game, which are now being played in Canton. The Birmingham faithful came out and supported this team. Every time they had a game, the crowds got bigger and bigger. Now, when other two teams were playing each other, it was a ghost town. But the city of Birmingham came out. I just think it's a travesty for the entire season to go on. Now that the championship game is here, it's being played in Ohio instead of being played in Birmingham. The people in Birmingham would come out, and especially if it was going to be played at Legion Field, which holds almost 80,000, versus on the campus of UAB, which holds 40-something thousand in their stadium. I could see 50,000-60,000 people showing up for Birmingham for this championship game.
Oh, yeah, I think that would have been really awesome had they done that. Again, speaking with Barry Shuck of Dogs by Nature. Barry, do you have an idiom for us today?
I do. I am going to give you the origins of the wave.
Great.
Now, the wave transcends all sports. It transcends all continents. It transcends all leagues. Everywhere you go, you can go to a high school basketball game, and somebody might try to start the wave. And if you've ever been in, every time you go to Wahoo Stadium, at some point, the employees of the Wahoos go way down the third baseline, down there and towards the water, and they try to start the wave. And when it goes around and it's successful, it's fun to be in. And if you're local, it's fun to be in. But if you've ever been in a really big stadium that is a bowl and all four sides go around, it looks just like an ocean wave, not cresting, not falling, but just rolling along, especially when people stand up with their arms. And it's a fascinating, fascinating thing that not only be in, but to watch just go and just go right around it. Well, the wave was first recorded in Oakland, California, in a playoff game between the Oakland A's baseball team and the New York Yankees on October the 15th, 1981. Now, it was conceived by an A's superfan named Crazy George Henderson. Now, he'd been on TV numerous times. Anytime the A's were on at a home game, you would see Crazy George. He came up with this idea, and he got the crowd to lift their arms and then go to the next one from the field. And it was successful. Now, the first football game to have the wave was 2 weeks later in Seattle with a college football game that pitted Washington against Stanford.
Wow. Well, there we go. I don't really participate in the wave, but it is very, really, really cool to see go around, especially as you mentioned, Barry, if it's in a bowl. Well, appreciate the time as always. You have a good weekend, Barry, with the holiday and all that, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, my friend. Go Wahoos.